potential sexual predators, and for the benefit of every citizen of the state, so they can protect themselves and their children and loved ones, and for the benefit of law enforcement. And with the help of the folks here and many others, that's been accomplished. Monday, the new system goes live and is available to every citizen of this state. And we hope to spread the word very completely starting today that this resource is available. We're going to demonstrate it to you, but it will mean that in one place, with the data as complete as we can make it and maintain it, the help of our friends in law enforcement, any citizen can know what sexual offenders, sex offenders live anywhere near them or work anywhere near them, can trace and track people by name if there's a specific person they're concerned about, and can take self-protective steps. Obviously, we're also interested in making sure law enforcement can do the best job in America of being vigilant against any recurrence of the crimes that put these people in the database to start with. So I very much want to thank all those who have come together, certainly the sheriffs of Indiana, who have an important continuing and difficult duty to keep this information current, but I know we'll do the very best job possible of that. I want to thank, obviously, our folks at the State Police and the Criminal Justice Institute and Department of Corrections who have pulled together to make what we think is as good a system as anyone has possible. I also want to strongly endorse the work of Senator Long and others who are attempting to give us new tools, new responsibilities to collect information, additional information about these offenders, and to make the protection of families and children in this state as good as it possibly can be. With the help of Brent, and I suppose we should step aside at this point, Brent, let you take center stage, and you're going to demonstrate this tool for us. And this will be big news because if a computer system ever operates while you folks are here, the way it did all morning before you got here, it'll be a first.
We already have our first technical difficulty. It has to warm up. Indiana Sheriff's Sex Offender Registry. This site takes the information that is currently on the Indiana Sex Offender Directory and combines that with the current Sheriff's Sex Offender Registry for a new registry here in Indiana. The first screen you're going to see, you can see right now.
Could someone put that microphone in front of
right next to him?
This one here?
Yeah.
This is the new look for the homepage for the Sheriff's Sex Offender Registry. It's very similar to the look of the current site. This is disclaimer information on the first page showing you the use and the types of information that you'll see on this site. What I'm going to do is go through a couple different types of searches that will be available with the new site and give you a couple of examples of how this will be available to users and what they'll be able to accomplish. Once you start getting into the system and once you're able to do a search, I've put an example up here for address, but you can do searches by address, by city, by zip code. You simply enter the address, city, and zip code, and then you click search registry into the top box. What you'll see is actually a map of Noblesville. There'll be several different graphics on your screen. The X represents the address that we're searching, and then there's a couple of different types of offenders that are listed on this screen. The blues are actually offender home addresses, and the green are actually offender work addresses. If we actually had offenders that were attending school, they would also appear on this map with a salmon color. If you put your mouse over an offender's icon, you'll get a pop-up screen that shows a picture of the offender and some details about that offender. You can also use this map to zoom in and out. There's navigational buttons over to the right side. You can zoom in as close as a half a mile or out as far as 20 miles. And you can also drag a square on this map, a GIS tool that if you wanted, you could actually drag a location on the map and it would actually scroll into that area and you'd see a much finer detail of those offenders. Another new feature of this site is what we call the map and list function. It's essentially the same tool that you just saw, except instead of seeing O's up on the top of the screen, now you're seeing numbers. The advantage to this is that users will be able to print this screen out, and they'll be able to see details of these offenders and their locations on the map. If you want more details about an individual, for example, information that's very comparable to what you see on the current Share Sex Offender Registry, you simply click on one of the offender O's that's on the screen, and you'll get this level of detail. This will tell descriptors about the individual, their addresses, whether it's home, work, employee, or employment, or school address, and then some information about their charges. Another type of a search that I want to demonstrate is a city search. And in this particular case, I've already selected Fort Wayne for that. You can select any city in Indiana. They will be available on the search feature. Again, this is just simply an example of the Fort Wayne map. There's several offenders that are located on this map, and I'll highlight over one. This is actually the work address for this particular individual. And again, you can highlight any offender that you want. You can click on any offender that you want, and you can get detailed information. Finally, as a part of this site, one of the key components of this initiative was to link up with the National Sex Offender Public Registry. The National Sex Offender Public Registry is an initiative of the Department of Justice, and we've integrated with that, and come Monday, we will be active on that site, and this information will be able to be searched nationally.
One thing, just ask.
So once again, Monday, and not before Monday, it'd be available. I hope I hope there'll be no confusion about that point, because again, for the 48 hours or so in between, you'd still get the old registry, and you might not get complete information. You certainly wouldn't get the functionality that Brent just showed you. This is a great achievement, Brent, to all you and your colleagues and all the organizations represented here. Dennis Brannon on behalf of the sheriffs, along with Mike Inswinger from the association. Once again, work is not done. This may be the best system around for the moment, but we're determined to make it better. Senator Long's bill would be very helpful and important. And once again, we have to do the best job we can of keeping a lot of data current as people move or change jobs and so forth. But we're equally committed to that and very, very grateful to those who've made this upgrade possible. Questions?
So how good a job has Indiana done in the past of keeping track of its sex offenders? Because that map of Fort Wayne, it sure looked like a lot of them floating around up there.
I don't know how to evaluate that. I'll just say that we're going to be in a lot better shape now. But once again, this will take constant vigilance. An awful lot of people, as you just pointed out, and these folks are in motion. Many of them are not truthful and honest by nature. That's why they're in this database. And no one's under any illusions that we're near a perfect system. But we're a lot nearer than we've ever been. And I suppose we're now about as good as any state we're aware of.
I noticed on the first sentence on the site is that there is no representation that the information is accurate. And I wondered if what the state does do to make sure an innocent person or an innocent, you know, maybe your address, because somebody used to live there, is somehow still on the site or something.
Well, let me ask if any of my partners here would like to speak to that. I know that's, as Brent said, waiver language. Some lawyer doing their job put it there to properly disclaim that perfection is not attainable. But how about the hypothetical? How about the issue that was just raised? Is there a way, what safeguards do we have, Dave or anybody, that against somehow an innocent name showing up in this database?
It's a great question, Governor. I would suggest that we defer that to the sheriffs that represent our community today, just so that they can respond to that. They're the local officials that handle
Mike,
that.
Mike, you want to do it? Or?
For the most part.
They probably want you over here.
Okay. For the most part, the general public herself is a great help on us managing this and sheriffs managing this. And believe me, if you've moved into a house where there was a sex offender at, you're going to get questions from your neighbors and everything else. So it's that person's responsibility to notify the sheriff or the sheriff's association immediately, and they're taken off of that. That address is taken off immediately, and that happens quite a bit. But the sheriffs are very conscious of that fact, and we don't want anybody represented on a sex offender that's not supposed to be there.
Our laws have been strengthened and probably need to be strengthened further. There is a burden, of course, I think I'm correct, a legal burden on the offender to report changes in residence or work place. And but not everybody does that, and we'll need to be as vigilant as we can be and vigorous if people are not living up to that responsibility.
To what extent have you verified all the information that will show up Monday?
I can speak to that. During the beta testing of this program since last October when Governor Daniels first announced the initiative, local sheriffs around the state, all law enforcement members in our community literally have been working aggressively to that end. We've been under beta testing now for some time, and sheriffs have gone through training. The Department of Corrections is facilitating that as best we can. And as the governor has indicated, that what comes live Monday is the efforts to improve the system. But this will be a work in progress. Literally, this system will allow for daily updates, so it'll be very current. And as information is improved, validation occurs at the local level, then that system will become vibrant literally within 24 hours from that understanding.
So are you saying that local law enforcement, just to clarify, have they been going door-to-door to verify these addresses?
Well, sheriffs have many initiatives today, and I'm sure that, in fact, has been occurring in certain counties around the state, as it's historically been done. But moving forward, because validation occurs or corrections occur, this system will then be updated within a 24-hour period to ensure that it's accurate for the public.
Again, we talked about it in October, but one enormous step forward here is to collapse two public databases, and actually there was a third available to law enforcement, into one. And one of the many risks we were running before was that someone checked one of the databases, thought they had a complete answer, and were unaware that maybe in a different database there was information that they really needed. By the merging of these three, should be behind us now.
Governor, do you support the legislation that Senator Long's committee passed that would require child molesters to wear tracking devices for life?
I probably do. I certainly support other aspects of that bill, requiring more complete reporting of employment, as I recall, data, for instance. I won't say there is no step in this area that we shouldn't take, but right now I can't think of one. The need to protect our citizens, especially our children, from known, convicted predators of this kind is about as imperative and absolute a duty as I think government has.
Are offenders now required to report where they work? It seems here in this news release it says, that Senate Bill 12 would require them to say where they work, but what you just demonstrated has where they work now. Are they required to say where they work now?
David, you want to take it?
The current requirement is prior to the potential of Senate Bill 12 is that the offender is in fact required to register their residence, their home, or their location of school. However, they can literally only do one, and they've complied with the current law. Senate Bill 12 now proposes that they are required to do all three, and any violation of those three is in violation of the law. So previous legislation would support just one location, and there was no reaction that law enforcement had.
But when you just demonstrate, you could click on and it shows where they work. Are you just saying that's how it's going to work in the future?
Well, I think some of them were supplying that information, or perhaps the sheriff insisted on that information, but there was no legal obligation and won't be until Senator Long's bill passes. No penalty if they didn't produce it. Have I stated
that's
that right,
correct,
David?
Yes, sir.
Thanks.
How have your office gone to consolidate local government, particularly the township assessors? What feedback have you gotten? I know a lot of lawmakers are getting grief from their
local folks back home, particularly the assessors. So.
Yeah. Well, elements of our local government reform bill are progressing, and in different vehicles and at different rates. That's very pretty. My house, they're more likely to play the can-can or what's that other song my girl has, one of my girls has? Don't you wish your girlfriend was hot like me? That's how I learned. That's the only way I learn any music these days is off people's cell phones. So where were we?
Right before the pussy
cat. Yeah, yeah. I don't think I completed the answer.
You said elements are progressing.
Yeah, the various elements are progressing. Some have more favor in one house as opposed to the other, and I think that, you know, we hope to bring as many of them as possible to fruition in a final bill. The legislature's got its own ideas. Yes, there's opposition to each part of this to differing degrees. No one said it'd be easy, but it's a good cause and be good for Indiana taxpayers. And we're going to keep pushing.
The bids are supposed to be in today. Do you have any information on that yet?
We'll be in radio silence till Monday, as we had indicated earlier. But bids are due by this afternoon, and then we'll study them and see if we have if that piece of the Major Moves program should move forward or not. And we'll make that decision over the weekend and communicate it to the state Monday morning.
During your State of the State address, in talking about Major Moves, you said that a number of projects would languish if it didn't pass. One of them was the Bridges project, but the Bridges project is under the current funding part of the plan. I just wondered why you said that.
Well, first of all, there are two bridges, and I don't think both are in the plan. I'd have to go back and look. If they're going to be any bridge at all, I will have to have an agreement with Kentucky, and I think their preference is you have to proceed on both. Secondly, if we don't have a lease and the benefits of it, all sorts of things will have to be relooked at in that plan. And there will be major projects, by definition, will fall out. I mean, 31 will not happen, for instance. Much of what we hope to do in Northwest Indiana will not happen. In any reasonable time frame, and the bridges, likewise, would be in jeopardy.
Why is that? I mean, you guys spent months prioritizing. These were marked in the yellow. I have them right now. Mm-hmm. They say they can be funded now, and then the pink and greens are the ones we're supposed to be trying to fund. Why is it would be reprioritized then?
Well, we brought a new rigor where none existed. To trying to prioritize these projects, that's all brand new. We don't treat it as sacred, and we've drawn a line that between those that existing funds, you're quite right, existing funds and the gap of unfunded projects would divide along. But if that's really all the money we have, we'll have to take a fresh look. There are some, and many legislators and mayors and others have pointed out that. That the mathematical approach and the weighting approach we used was a good idea, but it's not perfect, and we never claimed it was. So there could well be some below the line that on closer inspection need to be bumped up, and that would bump something out, like a car out of the field at the 500.
Governor, your campaign finance report this week showed that at least three out-of-state firms that are seeking state contracts made campaign contributions, and I wondered if, regardless of what past politicians and governors have done, if you're comfortable having companies who are seeking state business contribute to your campaign.
Well, I don't know who you're talking about because I don't pay that much attention, and we've got the most scrupulous separation in Indiana history between state business and politics, and we'll maintain that and prove it if we need to.
Governor, have the checks to the schools gone out with the tax amnesty money?
No, I'm pushing to get them ready as fast as possible. I hope we can. I was told we could definitely do it by the 1st of February, but I'm eager to do it on the first day possible. This is a cash flow issue. And therefore, every day that sooner that we can get the checks there is one day sooner folks can quit borrowing that amount of money and paying interest on it. So I'm in a big hurry, and I hope we can do it even next week. It's a mechanical issue. As you know, I have the authority, don't need anybody's permission to do this or further permission, and so I want those out the door as quickly as possible, and I'm hoping next week. Fast as possible. Local governments, of course, are also owed several hundred million dollars. But yes, this is, as I've always said, first step, balanced budget each year. As more money coming in, as much money coming in as the state is spending. Second step, or parallel step, pay back the debts that the state owns. Third step, make sure we have enough of a surplus rainy day funds for the inevitable ups and downs. And so my goal would be to do that as quickly as possible.
Governor, as you know, the counties that didn't get what they wanted on the time zones can submit new information mm-hmm. and seek a request tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you hope they hold off on that and give it some time to see how this all works out first?
That's for them to decide, not me. You're right. Any county in America can seek a time zone change any day it wants. And you know, those that just did could have done that any time, and they could do it in the future if they, for any reason, feel that their commerce and life in their communities would be better off on one or versus the other. But I've consistently said I think that choice is definitively one for local decision-making, as long as it doesn't create bigger issues. And so not for me to say.
Governor, Democrats walked out of the Education Committee this week before they walked out of a House committee. Are you getting any help or cooperation, or how is your relationship with members of the party these days?
Well, it's cordial, and I've had lots of individual visits and visited with their leadership, had them in for breakfast, as we do occasionally. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday of this week. I think that many elements of our plan are going to have of our agenda are going to have bipartisan support, including the education proposals that we've made. But you know, some jostling and jockeying and posturing is a natural part of the process, and I'm not surprised by it. You shouldn't be either. It's, you know, with us, it's results that matter, and I'm optimistic about results.
Leaders are going to have to, actually daylight savings time, they're going to have to change their clocks, many of them at least, on April 2nd. Is the state or anybody doing anything to make sure that everybody's aware of that? Because I'm getting all these calls from people who seem befuddled about when do they change their clocks and how.
Given the intensity of your interest in this subject, I don't doubt you'll... We'll all be advised about every 48 hours between now and then about this event. If we'll take a look at it and see, it's not very complicated, and I would think that the news media will probably, in pursuit of its own important duties, will see that information is widely known. But if it looks like that's not getting done, maybe we'll think of something.
Governor, on the toll road, turns out these bids come in dramatically higher than what you were expecting. Are we going to see you start working with lawmakers to come up with more road projects that can be done?
It'd be a nice problem to have. The gap is so enormous that I think that's unlikely. The gap between those projects we already agree, those investments and jobs that we already have agreed are vital, and the available funds is so large that I'm not holding out a lot of hope for something that quite that successful. But if it were to happen, yes, we'd be conferring with leaders in the General Assembly first, and with the business and civic leaders, mayors and others, about it. I will say that my strong view is that any proceeds from such a deal should be reinvested in the long-term future of the state. They should not be spent on matters of the present day. And they should be spent on job-creating investments. And I think we have plenty enough in the category of transportation, even if there were some additional funds available.
I want to make sure I understand what you were saying about the 10-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, if these proposals of the legislature don't pass, anything that's currently in the plan under the funded category is up for grabs.
Let me try to say it maybe more clearly than I did. If, in fact, we do not achieve progress against the gap, if we are limited to the less than half the funds we need, we will certainly have to take a sharper look at the prioritization. We never pretended that there was some perfect mathematical system for deciding that Road A made the cut and Road B did not. And therefore, it probably would be the case that some that were below the line, on closer review, we would decide to advance. And that would bump something that's above the line today. I think the prioritization process was very important in depoliticizing this and in really just bringing some order to it instead of doing projects in the order that they fell off the Xerox machine. But it's not sacred writ. And we don't pretend that it was more than a very useful first cut at deciding which projects will bring the most value, the most jobs, and economic impact to Hoosiers.
The bill is broader than what you and your officials have said you want to do with it, which is essentially the two toll road projects. Any thought to narrowing that so that lawmakers are buying less pig in the poke? And number two, why not mandate state police policing on the toll road instead of leaving that to the lease agreement?
Well, I answered the first question yesterday. Yes, I would welcome here, and there may be many other, there will be many other areas in which I'd welcome amendments that provide either some narrowing of the focus or some further reassurance that members of the Assembly would like to suggest, particularly as to scope. You know, we weren't really thinking about ports or anything like that when we made this proposal. We patterned a bill after those 18 states that already have authorizing legislation for public-private partnerships, so-called P3 agreements. But sure, I'd be willing to look at some narrowing of that. On the state police side, I'll just refer you to the testimony that Superintendent Weitzel gave on the agreement as it stands. He gets a new $5 million police post and a lot of new troopers. Under that agreement, the toll road would be better patrolled than it's probably ever been in its history. But if somebody's got a suggestion beyond that, we'd listen to it. I don't. I'll just say that those people I have listened to in the wake of the announcement are very upbeat. They believe that a good compromise, a good way forward was crafted. I've talked to President Herbert twice. I've talked to some trustees and many other friends of IU. I'm struck by the positive outlook that everybody I've heard from seems to have. So it seems to me folks of goodwill who love IU and know how important it is to the state's future have come together in a pretty constructive way.
Governor, do you have any concerns about these new standards going in that would make it difficult, if not impossible, for some immigrants who don't have Social Security numbers to get driver's license?
I don't have anything new to say about this. This is a very tough issue, and I do believe at some point we need to make it possible for those who are working here to insure their cars and to prove that they are capable of driving those cars, as opposed to operating without either of those things being taken care of. But it's a very tough issue when you have to square it with our commitment to legal immigration. You have to square it with our commitment to Homeland Security. Thank you all very much.